The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 571, recorded on April 27th, 2020.
Welcome to the 571st edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and 404th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinsier.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
And we are going to give you the 404 on this podcast. I don't even know what that means.
I thought that was missing file or something. 404? Not found?
I don't know. So I just heard that somewhere. I'm going to give you the 404.
Didn't there used to be like a... You used to be able to dial 4 or something for information?
411.
Probably, yeah. Something like that. 505 is missing website.
Okay.
I 411 sounds correct for, like, I don't know.
Something. It sounds like an error message.
All right. Let's Google this real quick.
No Gaming Flashback this week.
Yeah. 404 not found. Go ahead.
But on the other hand, we had a long discussion about Fallout last week.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good one.
And before that, we had a long discussion on Red Dead Redemption, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And we learned that, the sequels aren't nearly as good as the ones previous to it. Although, yeah, Red Dead Redemption 2 is technically a prequel, but still.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to talk about what we've been playing. I'm going to tell you what I did play and what I'm going to play. I got XCOM, the new XCOM Chimera Squad, and it's different, and very different, in fact. It is not totally divorced from XCOM gameplay, but first things first, now you have, this takes place after the events of the first XCOM, because the first XCOM had a happy ending. And now there's a city in the world which has integrated all the aliens and humans. And the Chimera Squad is a squad full of humans and aliens. So on my squad, you start off with two humans, a sectoid, and Advent. And then you can join an additional squad member. I decided to get one of the snake people. It's a female. One of the things is, now here's the thing, all the characters you do not create, they're all created for you. So they have specific personalities. So when I recruited her, she had sort of a sassy accent, sassy white girl accent, and she has this byplay with your dispatcher, which indicates she doesn't like him very much. So they all have their own unique personalities. And basically the entire game is breaching and clearing rooms. That's all you do. Breach and clear, breach and clear. And you patrol the city, and you have to make sure people are panicking, and every time you do a job in one area of the city, it calms it down, but the others get more chaotic. So you're trying not to have the entire city descend into chaos. It's really interesting. I don't know if I like it. A lot of people like it. Gameplay-wise, I'm not sure I'm sold, but, it's getting used to.
And I mean, you can't go wrong for $10 for that game. It is literally like $10 right now. And even when it's not $10, the most it's going to be is $20, I think.
Yeah, it's a $20 game. And here's the thing, it feels like a $30 game. Now, the problem is I haven't played all the way through, so I don't know how long it is. But there's one thing about it, and right there, the first button that you see is play and mods, so you can tell that Firaxis is saying, hey, guess what? Go ahead and mod the hell out of this game.
Mm-hmm. Firaxis is very used to doing mod support for its games.
Yeah, but in this case, it's sort of like saying, it's not a full game. We're depending on fans to take this and run with it. And, here's the thing. It has enough character, and it's so different from XCOM, the tone. Here's the thing. I think I posted this to you. my thing was, I think they should nickname this XCOM Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
That's basically the mood of the game. It's an action 80s cop show with all the cliches and all the bravado that you'd find in an 80s action cop show or movie. It is very loosey-goosey, and it's fun in that way. Everybody has great banter, so...
Yeah, even in like the trailer for the game, you had this bit between like I think the sectoid and the and one of the humans, like, I saved your life. That means you owe me. And it's like it's like you say, it's Hot Fuzz, Miami Vice, all that, all those.
It's really campy, and the entire thing is done with cell shading in the cutscenes. So you have the anime sort of thing. It also has a lot of anime in it, in that you'll have the two portraits of characters and they'll be talking. It's voiced at least, but you still have that style. And it's funny because all the aliens are also civilians. I remember one mission, you know, there's a female berserker, which I never thought I'd see in one of these games, who's just a pedestrian who's just trying to hide from the gunfire. And there's a lot of strategy involved. I still haven't figured out parts of the interface, like how you get new people for your armory, because the game starts out with getting you someone new.
Mm-hmm.
But having five people isn't enough, because you assign someone to do this, and you assign someone to do that, you know? So it's sort of like you have to have four people in order to do a mission. You must. So I'm waiting. I'm trying to figure out how to get that sixth person so I could have one person doing ops and another person helping with research. And yeah, there's a research tree too. Like I said, it's very XCOM. The main XCOM game is very global. XCOM Chimera Squad is very, very localized. A lot of the stuff that's in it is very just one city.
It's condensed down a little bit, but like you still have like the sectors of the city. Yeah. So like the sectors of the city act as sort of your nations in this game.
Yeah. And it's fun. I mean, you know, like I said, it's a completely different tone to the first two games. The first two games had humor in them. This one just goes ape with it. And it has some, you know, there's one thing in which you look at it, you're looking at a book, and it has Bradford being told by Kelly about her idea for a Chimera Squad, and is you got to be kidding me? Because remember, Bradford was the project manager of XCOM, so you know mostly all of his trials were with aliens, and now he's like, let's have a city with aliens and humans living comfortably together. The funniest part is that all the aliens talk like New Yorkers. They talk with thick New York accents, like what Midwesterners think New Yorkers sound like. Hey, what you doing here? And that just makes it funnier because you have one of the snake people talking like she's from the Jersey Shore, and another, and you know, and the sectoid acts like he's from Brooklyn. So it's that tonal shift, and you're either going to hate it, absolutely hate it, but most people are going to love it because it's just so goofy. And you were saying, TJ?
Oh, I just think so. The game takes place 5 years after the end of XCOM 2: War of the Chosen, and I think it's interesting because you have that war that just basically happened between all these people, and now you're asking them to live together in one city, and so like the whole underlying threat is that there's some sort of force pushing the city towards chaos and like breeding distrust among people because humans basically had to fight these people, these aliens back, and were almost enslaved by all of them.
Here's the thing, people were kidnapped by them, they weren't enslaved by them, and they were living side by side for the most part.
Oh, you know, if they did anything wrong, they would just be processed into, you know, goo. Or
we saw
death.
We saw this happening with.
But on the alien side, then you've got these humans that totally murdered the shit out of a bunch of them. So there's.
The funniest part is that the aliens are talking like New Yorkers. You never really quite got the idea because they never talked. The only one who's ever talked were the ethereals, you know. And here's the thing. It does make sense in a little way, because if you ever played XCOM and XCOM 2, the Ethereals are basically want to recruit humans. I mean, there's transhumanism, but basically there's a bigger threat, you know, and at the end of XCOM 2, it sort of hinted it's going to be Terror from the Deep. So I wonder if this is being released. Well, it's obviously, here's the thing. You can tell this is a game that like five people at Firaxis were working on, and the people who run Firaxis came over and said, hey, look, that's kind of cool. Why don't we expand on that? Sort of like how Portal got made. And I'm wondering if they're releasing this to give the next XCOM sequel more room to breathe. Like, people will get their XCOM fixed now so that they're not tired of waiting for XCOM. Sort of like giving people a thin mint first.
Because they went out of their way to say, like, despite the fact that it happens after XCOM 2 and it's 5 years after the events of it, they went out of their way and in PR messaging to say this is not a true sequel. This is a spinoff story. So it's like, I don't know. It's definitely like just like
it's. You know what's funny is that they took some of the stuff from Project Phoenix, I think it is, you know, by the original XCOM guy. Like, when you do Overwatch, you actually do the cone of vision that's in that game rather than regular XCOM, because when you put someone in Overwatch and XCOM, they attack anybody who moves. But in this case, it makes sense because not only is the game scope smaller, so are the battlefields. Because when you're playing this, you're basically fighting in rooms, room to room to room. Because it's all breach and clear, breach and clear, breach and clear. Go ahead.
Yeah, and like, not only is it breach and clear, it's depending on which. So maybe you discovered a little bit of this, but it actually becomes more prescient later on, where certain aliens or certain skill classes have various you have various breach options for each situation. Yeah.
And also, by the way, every class of person has their own abilities. Like, the Advent guy comes with a shield. Now, here's the thing. In this game, you have the opportunity where it's better if you knock crooks out instead of kill them. Because the more crooks you knock out, the more intel you'll get. You know? So, the Advent guy has a shield, and he not only can knock people out for an extra point of damage, but he also has an energy that knocks things back behind him. So what's really fun is finally able to do that, stick your tongue out, draw someone to you, and then grab them. That the snakes do in XCOM 2. Well, now you get to do it on the good side, which is strangely satisfying. And also the sectoid has his ability to make people go crazy or make them fear, you know. It's nice to have those alien abilities now working on your side.
Yes, it is very cool to be able to play as a sectoid and a viper, and I think at some point there's a possibility that you play as a brute something like that.
Brute is available. I forgot the name of those big guys.
So these are things that you could sort of do in XCOM 2, but not like canonically. You could mess around with it in PvP mode, and that's about it. Yeah. So like, it's really cool to be able to like do the Viper's bind and acid attack, and like the Sectoid's mind psionic abilities. Those are really awesome to like have on your side for once.
And again, I like the banter between the characters in the group. It's nice to see them just, if not exactly getting along, just being a band of brothers, basically, you know, battle-hardened people. So like I said, I don't know if I like it as much as I do regular XCOMs, but it is a nice little change of pace. The other game, I'm not going to be able to play it until tomorrow, is Gears Tactics, speaking of XCOM, and it's been getting good reviews. And
I actually reviewed this.
And it's free on Game Pass, so I'm going to be playing that. And this Thursday, I'm going to have to choose what game to play, because I also bought Prince of Persia on Steam for the purposes of being able to stream it. So we'll see. Prince of Persia 2008, by the way, which is one of my favorite games of all time. And it's funny because people like the other Prince of Persia games, but I like the characters in Prince of Persia 2008 much, much better. And it's too bad they never – it was sort of like the DMC effect, you know. Never caught on, so they just forgot about them. So we'll never happen to know what happens to the prince in Elika.
Yeah.
Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing The Messenger. It's a indie kickstarted game where you play as a ninja, and it's kind of like Ninja Gaiden meets Metroid, and you get your quest.
Is it a Devolver Digital game?
No, it's a Sabotage.
That's the developer. Devolver Digital is the publisher. Yeah, this game came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah. And, the reason why I'm playing it now is they're developing a new game called Sea of Stars that they've also put on Kickstarter. And it just I think it made quadruple what they originally asked for. It made like a million, and they asked for like, I think, 90 grand or something like that. It was basically a huge amount more than
The Messenger is overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam, so
oh yeah,
sure that would be for another game by them.
It's very different. Sea of Stars is more of a Chrono Trigger like RPG, turn based JRPG, whereas Ninja Gaiden is a side scrolling kind of Metroidvania game, because you get power ups stronger as you go along. There's little collectibles. There's also a nice save feature where if you die, a little demon brings you back and says that he'll eat the little time charts that you're collecting until he feels he's gotten enough and then leaves. So each time you die, that's your punishment. You lose some time charts or time if you just sit there and let him chill, and then he'll just go away after a while. But it's a very challenging game. It's still a lot of fun. It's retro graphics, and I guess retro music. It's very addictive music, and it definitely breaks the fourth wall a bit, I think, because you have the shopkeeper that is gives you your upgrades, and they're constantly kind of making remarks about the kind of level you're in and what to expect, and there's a lot of like snarkiness. So it's a very entertaining game.
Yeah, and Sea of Stars is not going to be out for. It's going to be out around 2022.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
I mean, Sea of Stars is very anime-esque. I mean, if I didn't know anything about it, I would say, oh, they're doing a new Star Ocean game.
They apparently took a lot of inspiration from Chrono Trigger, but I feel like I see a lot of original Secret of Mana in there too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, there's on Sea of Stars. There you have the Solstice Warriors, and one is the sun, and one is the moon, and they combine their abilities for special attacks. There's a third character that's a support character. I guess they've called him like kind of like the food paladin or the chef paladin. He'll like give boosts to the other two characters. I don't know too much about this other than being like a Chrono Trigger. They actually have the composer for Chrono Trigger on this game developing this game.
The Kickstarter backing ended last week. They were looking for Canadian dollars, and they ended up with 1.6 million.
Yeah.
Which is basically 1,000 times more than they were asking for.
Mm-hmm. I guess you say, hey, we're going to make a game like Chrono Trigger, and people just go crazy.
Well, here's the thing. It may be inspired by it, but it doesn't look anything like Chrono Trigger.
Right. It does look very different, but I think...
It's like Chrono Trigger had sex with Star Ocean. Except for the turn-based RPG.
Right. But there is something... I guess there's a vibe or something, like a spiritualness or something to it. Messenger had a really great story, and I think a lot of people are very confident that they'll get a good story with this game. And I'm playing The Messenger just to see what to...
The Messenger is nothing like this game. The Messenger is a 16-bit retro.
Right. I know, this is but not. there's a quality of story is what I'm expecting.
Okay. I don't even know if the stories are going to be similar. I mean, maybe the quality. Yeah, I get it, the quality of story. But I don't think the themes of the two are similar at all. Mm-hmm. I think they're just doing something completely different. And here's the thing, right. You know, it's fine when you make something like Ukulele or Bloodstained or anything like that, which are basically the creator of Castlevania says, well, I can't make Castlevania, but if you back Bloodstained, wink, 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 you know, at least Sea of Stars is something completely original. Even if it's inspired by Chrono Trigger, it doesn't look anything right. like Chrono Trigger. It's not going to play like... It's like... Or maybe Trials of Mana. Do you think it looks like Trials of Mana?
I think what they meant is the battle. There's going to be combination attacks. And because you did have combination attacks in Chrono Trigger, and so there's going to be combination attacks in here, but there's going to be their own style of combination stuff.
But anyway, I'm just saying it's something original, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't – it slightly annoys me when people back something because it reminds them of something they want, like Mighty No. 9. Well, it's not Mega Man, but wink, wink. Ukulele, it's not Banjo-Kazooie, but wink, wink. You know, you can't say, oh, this is, you can't even say it's Chrono Trigger, wink, wink. It's just, check out this new IP that we're starting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, it's fine for that. And, you know, I know a lot of people will just buy a game just for the composer. Like, a lot of people bought Blue Dragon, not because it was Mistwalker, but because Iwamatsu, I think his name is, was doing the score for it.
So, I'm gonna
pick this up, Blue Dragon score, but they did it just for the music, basically.
Mm-hmm. I feel like music can really make or break a game if you have really bad music and it's.
It's not that it's bad music. Nobuo Uematsu. I was right.
Yeah, it really adds to the atmosphere of the game, and if it doesn't go with the game, it can be very jarring and not as entertaining.
By the way, that reminds me, TJ?
Yes?
I wasn't impressed by the music in Nier Automata.
Not impressed?
No. Nope.
In what way?
You kept on going on and on. I thought it was dull. I didn't like it. If you compare it to the music, look, the music in Prince of Persia 2008 is magnificent. The music in Nier Automata is like, I've heard this before. It's boring.
You know, I just don't know if I agree with that.
The music in Blue Dragon was much better than Nier Automata.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
The music is highly subjective. I'm just saying I was disappointed.
Yeah, it's absolutely. But, like, I'm not saying, like, the Nier Automata soundtrack is just, like, a nonstop thrill fest of bangers. I'm saying that there are probably more tracks than not that, like, I could probably listen to for, like, long periods of time, and have.
I was not expecting a bullet hell shooter either.
Mm-hmm. That game is all sorts of weird things in one.
Mm-hmm.
So what have you been playing, TJ, aside from Gears Tactics?
You want me to talk about Gears Tactics?
No, we'll do it next week.
Okay. Fair enough. Oh, shit. What should I talk about then?
Is that all you've been playing, Gears Tactics?
Well, I did it for review, so, like...
I mean,
well,
yeah, because the... for those of you who know, the embargo date was broken today, so that's why there's a bunch of reviews of Gears Tactics up.
Yes. And I will save that for next week, if that's the case. But yeah, I did. But other than that, I'm trying to think of anything else I played, which would be Final Fantasy? No, you know what? I know what I played today. I played Cloudpunk. Have you guys heard of this?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so Cloudpunk is it takes place in a cyberpunk future, but, like, the whole art style is voxels, so, like, everything is built out of little small blocks, but it doesn't look like Minecrafty. It actually looks like a cohesively dark and gritty experience full of neon and stuff.
This is one of the games that Microsoft is showing off at E3 last year. It's for PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. So.
And you take on the role of a delivery driver for a for a group called Cloudpunk, and they will basically deliver anything, no questions asked, and very specifically no questions asked, because everything is not always on the level. So this is a driving game in which you work to basically move deliveries between different entities and sort of interact with various groups and societies within this city, which is very typically cyberpunk, in that there's like the rich and the affluent at the top of the city, and the poor and like the downtrodden are kept to like some lower area slums.
I like to think of it as, you know, sort of steam. Cyberpunk, but mixed with GTA. And by GTA, I mean the old style GTA. I mean, it's not top down, but it does have that aesthetic of the first two GTA games. Sort of, you know, it's just
how is the driving on this game, TJ?
It is acceptable. Like, I had it doesn't go at like breakneck pace fast, but it does like require you to do a little bit of maneuvering, because there's a lot of traffic in some areas, and there's a lot of there's verticality to the game. So basically you have to move up and down with your ship and make your way to different platforms.
Yeah, where, I made it misleading in saying it's like the first two GTAs. It's not top down. I mean, there is a radar that is top down, but it's basically side on.
I think this is called third person, where you're like behind the car.
No,
and you're looking...
No, it's like a platform. It has a platformer look, even though it's not a platformer. It does have depth, though.
Yeah.
I just wondered if this was the kind of driving game where the cars feel very unstable, and like you just touch another car and you go flying off, or if it's more...
No, it's actually
that.
It's pretty forgiving. Like it feels very deliberate, but not like at the cost of feeling like way too cushy. That said, I ended up, as I was learning it, I bumped into a lot of things and didn't have too much issue. It's a very forgiving game for what I can tell so far. It's mostly about driving and narrative so far, from what I can tell.
It also uses a very old-fashioned 3D, and that's called voxels. For those who don't know what voxels are, they're 3D pixels. So basically everything is made up of little tiny bricks called voxels. We don't use them because we use polygonal 3D, while voxels, it's like a 3D picture of pointillism. So it has a unique look. And one of the advantages of using voxel is that you can get some really good particle effects, because that's all voxels are. When, say, I build a building, that's basically a particle effect, except it's solid and it forms a building.
Yeah.
So, yeah, voxels can create some nice explosions.
This was also, like, speaking of which, this was also very it made for a very fun experience during some narratives, because the city is always moving, and there's things that are happening around you as you're going through the narrative. I got a delivery to this guy that lived down in the slums, and he was basically talking to me about what he received. And as he was talking to me, just, like, an entire section of the city and voxels behind him just fell apart. And he just like was that, I'm just sitting there like, was that supposed to happen, or is he going to address that? And he never talked about it. So I think I can't tell if that was just the game or if it was like an actual like narrative cue.
By the way, it is also heavily influenced by Blade Runner. I mean, mm-hmm. One thing,
oh,
it's
yeah.
always night and it's always raining. It never
yes.
stops raining. And you have these buildings which are named after places, just like Blade Runner was, like the Bradford.
And
by
neon
the way,
lights.
The city is gigantic.
Yes, it's
and
very, very
get
big.
Get lost really quickly in the game.
Well, not too bad. You always have a radar that
yeah,
tells you where to go.
It's just gigantic, and it's easy to get. It is easy to get lost because it is a 3D map.
And also there are different sections. Like there are, you work your way through different districts of the city with your deliveries. So like as I mentioned, there's the slum area, there's the middle class area, there's a affluent area, and It's all very interesting. I really enjoy, and it's kind of relaxing right now. Like the whole, like I said, the whole thing is mostly driving and narrative so far. I don't know if there's going to be more like stressful stakes later where I have to drive on time or like not crash into anything or my vehicle will explode. But like right now, it's mostly delivery driving and narrative, which is kind of a chill.
It also has fake FMV video.
It also has a pretty dope soundtrack.
That's good.
But I'm just saying, this game wants to feel like you're playing something from 1995.
Mm-hmm.
With the FMV and the cheesy dialogue and if you were gaming in 1995, this is basically one of those games which came on a CD and it was so proud of it came on a CD. Full motion video, real acting.
Also, I do gotta say, Cloud Punk has my favorite side character of 2020 so far. You actually play a named character in this game, Rinia or something like that.
Rinia, but, and are you gonna talk about her AI companion, Camus?
Camus.
They mispronounced his name.
But I mean, everybody in the game says Camus, so I'm in. So
yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah, they don't want to make it. They don't want to make a literary reference too obvious.
Well, everybody calls him Camus, so I'm going to call him Camus as well. Anyways, Camus' best friend, Cyberdog. It's basically like it's implied that something happened to Camus. Camus used to have a body. Camus doesn't have a body anymore. So your driver loads Camus into her AI on her vehicle, and Camus does internet searches for you and investigates things and keeps you in the know when things are going down, and there's also a best friend dog.
Yeah. He's naive and curious.
There is literally a part where like he's just like, "What is box?" And
how do I shot web?
Yeah. I love Camus. Camus is easily my favorite little thing to have come out of side characters in 2020 so far.
The best cyberpunk delivery game ever. And by delivery, I mean like Philip J. Fry delivery. Because basically what you're doing is you're just going from place to place delivering packages.
I will say this. The game says very much from the outset, there are two rules to Cloud Punk. Get all deliveries done on time and don't ask questions. Main character asks a lot of questions, which leads me to believe that she's just bad at her job.
She has a death wish.
Since one of the rules is don't ask questions, do you have the option to ask questions?
No, not yet. Well, there's been one choice in the game so far, and it was like – it felt like a pretty important choice, and I imagine that there will be more down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also just random characters in the city that you can run into that will like start basically threads of quests that you can explore as you continue to go through the game. And in addition to the main game, the game's main narrative. So there's a lot to explore. There's like a lot to check out. There's a lot to see. There's a lot to do. And I feel like it's going to be like rewarding for a while.
By the way, we should mention the name of the developer. It's Ion.
Ion Lands.
Yeah. And they also did Phoning Home.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, that reminds me. Phoning Home reminds me that a game that is now on Xbox Game Pass is Mechanarium, which is an adventure game from a way back, and it is one of the prettiest games. It's about robots, and it's hand-drawn animation, and it looks really cool. I remember playing the demo. I never actually played the game itself. I'm just saying, if you want to look up Mechanarium, go ahead. It's I think it came before WALL-E, in fact.
Hmm.
But anyways. I mean, here's the thing. When you actually play Cloud Punk, watch any videos, Scott. I mean, It's voxel, but it looks really cool.
Yeah, they did a good job with it.
And like I said, you know, the thing is that voxels make movement really possible because, unlike a lot of things, voxels are already in the world So when you manipulate them, you're not decreasing any computing power because they're always there. I mean, the number of voxels on a screen determines how much power you have, but whatever you have on the screen, it'll never be overloaded because they're already there. You know, you're not creating anything when you make a particle effect. You're not, you know, basically, it's like living in Legoland, except the Legos are tiny, tiny, tiny.
Yeah. It's, and like, from the distance, it doesn't look like voxels. It's very well put together.
Yeah, I mean, voxels have come a long way.
For sure.
It's still strange, because voxels, like I said before, voxels are a 3D graphics design that people don't use because polygonal just dominated everything, and you can put textures on digital, and you can do with all the, you know, which you can't do with voxels, because voxels have to be a certain color. I mean, you can put textures, I guess, on individual voxels, but there's no point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like retro and future at the same time, the tech, because you could never have this many voxels on a screen like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it is quite impressive when it's all in motion.
Yeah. Anyways, there is some stuff that we're going to be talking about. The first news item. God Galaxy 2.0 now includes your gaming subscriptions. This comes from some PC Gamer. God Galaxy 2.0 is poised to leave beta soon. It's not actually, it's now available because I actually upgraded my Galaxy to 2.0. But in the meantime, a new update has arrived that you can download now. Living up to its goal to be a unified launcher, God Galaxy now includes your gaming subscriptions. They're collected by default, too, so once you update your client, you should be able to see them appear straight away. With the likes of Game Pass for PC and Uplay Plus, a lot of folks' games are now attached to subscription services. And if you're trying to juggle multiple subs, you can now see them all in one place. Download the update and you'll be able to browse and install these games just as you would with the ones you own outright. Update 5 also lets you link multiple executables to any game, and you can customize them with your own launch parameters, too. This should be handy for modding, cheats, and playing different versions of game, like 64 or 32-bit variants. Other new additions include custom sorting tiles to let you organize your games, UI improvements, and better scrolling, as well as a bunch of fixes. So when I load up, GOG Galaxy, it's now a lot more like Steam, even more like Steam, because it'll show own games, installed games, activities, friends online, even though I don't have any friends on GOG yet. I haven't tried the linking my Xbox Game Pass yet, but I could.
I did the GOG as well, and it does look like Steam. I was able to.
It looks a lot link, cleaner.
Yeah, I was able to link my PlayStation, Epic, Origin, Uplay, Steam, and I thought I had some Xbox games, but apparently I don't.
No,
I
it's
guess.
Windows. You're thinking of Windows 10. I think those you have to do manually. When they're talking about Game Pass is different.
Right. I don't have that, right.
Yeah. Have you seen it, TJ?
Which one? The God Galaxy?
The new interface.
No, I haven't used God Galaxy before.
Really?
Nope. Huh. I don't really have anything on GOG, so I never had a reason
to
have GOG.
There's Switch on here.
Yeah, I see Animal Crossing New Horizons as recently played by others.
Yeah, I see that. I was like, that's crazy. I guess some of my
friends have been playing Mountain Blade 2, Bannerlord. That just came out. I'm assuming Resident Evil 3 is you, TJ?
Probably.
And Half-Life Alyx. And Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I have that now as well. I'll be playing that this coming week.
That might be you, then.
Yeah
I was going to say, I haven't played Half-Life Alyx yet.
Okay, but these are recently played by others. I don't know if it means
might be others
people
in general.
I know, or just people in general.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Animal Crossing New Horizons is not a PC game. Not yet, anyway.
No.
So I'm looking at friendly
reports.
So
you must be able to link your Switch, then. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that allows you to log in all of your stuff, like PSN and online and all that stuff, and it'll just detect what you have there. Like I said, I haven't done that yet, so.
Yeah, I have my GOG, Xbox Live.
By the way, TJ, they have done a VR-less you know, no VR version of Alex, and it's terrible.
Yeah. I mean,
not meant for that, for, you know.
The game was designed from the ground up for VR, so I don't know why. I know why people would want to try to make it not VR, but
people just want to know what happens in the story. Fortunately, here's the thing. Even though it's a prequel, from what I understand, there's some real big plot twists that even if you know the story of Half-Life 2 inside and out, there's some stuff that'll shock you. So I don't know what they are, so I can't. So all you have to do is say add games and friends, and then you can be like, I can connect Xbox Live. I can connect Epic Games Store, Origin, PlayStation Network, Steam, Uplay, and I'm pretty sure Nintendo as well.
Yeah, the Nintendo one is the one I'm looking for. I see all the others.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
But obviously people have been able to. So, we'll see. Anyway, so, it's nice to have, I've never been bothered by having multiple storefronts, to tell you the truth, but I know a lot of people complain, like they complain about Epic because, oh no, we have to have another storefront.
Yeah, that seems silly to get upset about. I mean, because like you can use Discord, Skype, and all sorts of ways to communicate with your friends, and you don't need it to be through the storefront itself. So it doesn't divide the fandom like people seem to act like it does. You just play your game on whatever platform you feel like, and there's just no need to be angry about it that people are really upset, and because it just didn't make sense, because nobody was upset that GOG came along, and I know GOG
upset
does
with
a lot
Gamers
of
Gate or you know, here's the thing though, people are too tribal, I think.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is the only place in which people are angry about having more choices. What the hell? I mean, if you had two different supermarkets in the same neighborhood, you're not going to be angry that you have two different places to buy food.
Yeah, nobody gets upset you have Target and Walmart and all these other local grocery stores. You just go to the one you want. Nobody cares.
I hate Target.
That's fine. You can hate it. You know, exactly. You can hate it. Nobody's going to get upset.
But I also hate people who go there. Just
aw, TJ.
No, I don't have enough hate in my heart for that. I'm impressed and confused by people that do.
I don't know. I mean, I can see, where the problem of having... I mean... It was a pain. Say if you bought an Ubisoft game in Steam, first you had to log on to Steam, then you had to log on to Uplay. It's like, right. How many doors do I have to go through? I mean, that I can understand.
Xbox games do that too. If you have an Xbox game that's on Steam, and then you have to go in and log into your Xbox Live account, it's silly.
But you only do it if you have online gameplay. I mean, like Halo or something, you know, in which the online is important. But if you have something like Cuphead, it doesn't ask that.
Not true. Xbox, Gears Tactics makes you do it.
Well, Gears Tactics is going to have a multiplayer mode, doesn't it?
Nope. It's a single-player-only game, and they've actually said that it's only going to be a single-player-only game. That's what made me confused about that, is that, like, the first time I logged into Gears Tactics, it was like, you got to sign into Xbox Live, and I'm just like, why?
This is really weird. Like, you know what? It's actually showing my Xbox One games on here.
That's cool.
Yeah, I just find it weird, and I don't play Gigantic. I don't know. I mean, I think I downloaded it, but oh well.
But yeah, so I don't know if that's like with new games, but yeah, whether it has an online component or not, Xbox will make you log in, which is a bummer. I don't like it.
This is reminding me I own Bendy and the Ink Machine. That's just depressing.
So. But God Galaxy, all your clients in one place sounds appealing. Yeah. Sounds easy peasy.
Well, here's the thing: I'm never going to use it for low because I'm still going to go to say Xbox Game Pass for PC to launch my games. But it is a good way to, you know, briefly look at everything you have in one space.
Yeah.
So, anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Fallout 76 to add pets. This is from Eurogamer. Pets are coming to Fallout 76, Bethesda has said. Project lead Jeff Gardner and his end lead designer, Ferret Baudouin, held
Stop for a moment. He has the first name of Ferret.
Yeah, that's weird, but that's, you know, let's try not to judge.
At least Falcon is my last name.
That's a cool name.
Ferret?
I would be okay with having the first name of Ferret, because that almost automatically means that you have to. No, you have to be. That means that you either have to be the thief or the. You have to be the thief or the rogue in whatever fantasy party you're about to be part of, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but you also have to be chaotic. You can't be law. You have to be chaotic evil too.
You don't have to be evil. Who says you have to be evil?
You can be chaotic neutral.
Be chaotic good for all I care.
I don't think ferrets are chaotic good.
Some ferrets can be chaotic
good. Ferrets are sweet. I don't know what you're going on. Anyways, so we're getting distracted here. So lead designer Ferret Baudouin held a Reddit AMA yesterday, and in it revealed some new features coming to the post-apocalyptic MMO. Edible ones? Oh, wow, really? Edible pets? Edible ones, Gardner joked when asked if pets were coming to the game. I kid. Now that we have our companion system in the game, we are looking to add pets as well. The recent Wastelanders update added a raft of companions to the game, some of whom can be romanced.
Oh, God, I hope you can't romance the pets.
Yeah, that's okay. And the Fallout series has a history of pets as companions, with dog meat being our particular favorite. I expect dogs to be the top of the list when pets arrive in Fallout 76. So I guess cats and birds and maybe some other stuff. Other highlights from the AMA include word a mole miner NPC, similar to fan favorite Merg, will hit the game soon. And Bethesda teased the arrival of Brotherhood of Steel, which is pretty exciting for Fallout fans. Let's just say the Brotherhood is now watching the wasteland of West Virginia very closely, Gardner said.
I'd like to ask one thing. Why didn't Bethesda just wait 2 or 3 years and release a Fallout MMO? A real Fallout MMO, because that's where this is going now.
I think this is they wanted to do one thing, and it didn't get executed well in the audience.
They wanted to do Rust in the Fallout universe. That's what they wanted to do, and didn't work out.
No, it didn't work out, and they realized they needed to do NPCs, and they needed to have more immersion to the game, and because you just have people that need something there, you know, they can't just, I guess, make it on their own. They want to feel that the game has something there for them to interact with and not just they're running around an empty space making up stuff on their own.
I think they just thought that making an MMO would be too expensive and they would just want to do a games as service.
But they did Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, it's more expensive to do a flop. And here's the thing. Had they announced, 2 years ago, when they announced Fallout 76, instead announced Fallout MMO coming in 2022. I think people would have been really, really hyped. And, you know, they could have released Fallout 76 as sort of like a preview. Like, okay, this is just a tiny little slice. Release it for free. Get people jazzed up about what might be, you know. But no, they had to go the quick and easy route, and they found out the quick and easy route was too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing I've heard about Fallout 76 is that everybody who's played it and gotten into it and stuck with it has mostly, like, had a good time with it. And the NPCs, they just add to it. So, like, for those people that have stuck in there, good for you. And also, I'm happy that you get to have more things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, who expected Fallout 76 to last this long at...
It's the same deal with No Man's Sky, though. Here's the thing, you know. Bethesda, Fallout 76 could not fail. It's like Rainbow Six Siege. Rainbow Six Siege had a very rough launch, but Ubisoft needed it to succeed. So they kept hammering at it and kept hammering at it and kept hammering at it. That's what Bethesda's doing with this. They cannot allow Fallout 76 to fail. They can't.
I guess that's... a good thing that they don't just let it sit there and be a mess or anything. They try to fix it.
Then you have the idea of sunk cost fallacy. Is there's a time in which you might have to cut the strings. I mean, remember EverQuest Next?
No.
Then there you go. EverQuest Next was going to be the next EverQuest. It was going to have user-created content, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, Sony Online Entertainment said, this is not working. We're going to have to just cut ties with it, even though they sunk money into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Fallout 76 is apparently working at this point. Like, I've heard people that aren't even Fallout 76 apologists now saying that the game is well worth time.
I guess. But, like I said, imagine if they had not released Fallout 76 in this condition and just waited until and made a true Fallout MMO. I mean, it's not like Elder Scrolls Online was a failure.
It would be a lot like that one saying that, you know, a delayed game might be delayed, but a good bad game lasts forever, or whatever it was. Or good game could be delayed, but a bad game lasts forever. Yeah, for some people, that bad taste might last all the time, but for those that stuck with it, they should hopefully, like TJ was saying, be happy with what they have now. I think they should
have started off with an MMO idea and just ran with that instead.
Hindsight's 2020, I guess.
No, that was foresight. I don't think any – people weren't – when Fallout 76 was announced, people were doubtful. So it's not
they,
like,
they weren't – then nobody would have pre-ordered if they were doubtful. People pre-ordered like crazy. They wanted the was it the helmet this time?
I rented it. I forgot what it was. So it's like,
it was the helmet.
The helmet, yeah, the helmet and the canvas duffel bag and
Bethesda failed to what's it called? They asked for a duffel bag. Was a cheap piece of shit.
Yeah, it was cheap, unfortunately. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, there are people who are going to pre-order. There's always going to be people who pre-order.
Yeah.
You know, I spent $880 on Psychonauts 2. It's not a pre-order, it's a backing, but it's more or less the same thing, you know.
Right.
I got most of my physical things. I'm still waiting for the book bag, but I got my badges. All the stuff is high quality, by the way. My badges are really high quality. I forgot the name of the camp was called. Something for a camp for psychics. I got all my badges. The ones that you get that Raz gets in the first game. Like I said, Elder Scrolls Online launched, people thought of it as sort of mediocre, but it's really gotten its legs. I think Fallout 76 would have been much better, because here's the thing, I'm tired of elves, dwarves, you know, and mages. Fantasy MMOs up the wazoo, I don't care. I don't want another fantasy MMO. Fallout 76 at least would have been a post-apocalyptic MMO.
But I feel like I've seen post-apocalyptic stories up the yin-yang as well.
Not as an MMO, no. I mean, even rare are the modern times ones, which is why I'm sad that the Secret World never really took off. That could have been... At some point, someone's going to make a modern times MMO, and it's going to be really successful. And no, I'm not thinking of Second Life.
Wasn't Metro City or what was the thing? I'm trying to remember what it was.
3? That was post-apocalyptic.
Well, thinking at least modern times.
No, it wasn't modern times. It was 2033.
Okay, yeah,
I'm
but
not even talking about that, though. I mean, that's
13
not an MMO.
Years from now. It's not that far away.
But it's not an MMO. It was never an MMO. It was only a shooter.
It was definitely RPG. Online, because you had these missions, and there was some... I just can't remember what it was, if it was Metro or something else. But, modern times MMO would be interesting. I guess GTA... 5 would be the closest MMO.
Actually,
to that.
All those superhero games are modern time MMOs. They're sci-fi fantasy, but they're still set in the modern times.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Minecraft City was created by a team of professional builders from Eurogamer. The Minecraft community, known for its incredible creations... The Minecraft community is known for its incredible creations, but this stunning city was built by the pros. City of Aurario is an incredibly detailed 1500 by 1500 creation of the Labyrinth City of Aurario from the Dan Machi anime. Its centerpiece is a massive pillar dungeon around which the city spreads in a circle.
By the way, Scott, to give us a sense of scale, how big is 1500 by 1500 in Minecraft?
That's pretty sizable. I mean, it's, I think, full-size map, and yeah, it's basically a thousand over 1500 blocks. So it's pretty sizable.
Nice. City of Aurario is just begging to be explored in game, but you can't download it, unfortunately. It's the work of a team of professional Minecraft builders who go by the name Varuna. Varuna, which is made up of architects, designers, and artists, create custom builds for private clients. City of Aurario was one such commission. A rep for Varuna took to the Minecraft subreddit to reveal that it took over 2 months for the team to complete the work, spending around 12 hours per day on it. The dungeon is in the center of the map is actually cut off compared to the original in the anime because it hits Minecraft's world height limit. Remarkably, each house has its own interior. A cursory glance at Varuna's website shows off more amazing Minecraft builds, some of which you can buy. The floating Asian hub, for example, will set you back $50.
It is pretty, though.
That's nice. If it's built well, then yeah, it's worth it. I know I've seen other stuff go online for builds. There's a World Wonders site where they have some World Wonders on there, and they have the Statue of Zeus, but they used dirt for his hair, so I didn't really feel that that was worth it. But yeah, it's really cool if you want just like a hub or an arena or somebody else to build something, and then you can just create a world that you go adventuring in or exploring, and that could be a lot of fun.
If I had this, I would create a separate server. I'd build two of them, and one of them I would just destroy like Godzilla, because you don't build a sandcastle without knocking it down again.
Yeah, you could certainly do that. You just back it up and then throw dynamite at it.
Just have people just doing a get some people with rocket launchers and, you know, have a destructible team deathmatch in it.
Yeah.
If you look at the picture, I mean, it really is detailed. I mean, you have like 30 little hovels on each side to give you the scale, and all of the buildings have their own interiors.
Mm-hmm. There's a giant tower in the middle. There's an arena in one of the districts. Mm-hmm. It's a pizza shaped building, so there are 8 slices.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, I would love to see if Microsoft would commission cities from these people and then make a game around it, you know, make a Minecraft spin-off, like have people be able to have, you know, their own death matches.
You can use this adventure map to make
games, you know.
You can make this map an adventure map. I assume that's what's going to happen. Some private person got this commission so they can make it an adventure map and have – they just want the buildings built, and then they could script in characters and command blocks and all sorts of stuff to make an adventure or private arena games with their own server friends or whatever. That's obviously – I think that's what's happened here.
I think it's a clan and they just want a place to hang out.
Yeah. I mean, it's their world map, and they'll go in there, and that's their base, and then they'll probably just go out to the end or do other buildings or whatever, and that's again their base of operations, and somebody they pay people to make a very cool base for them.
Yeah, here's the thing I'm thinking of. Imagine what that's going to look like with Minecraft RTX with ray tracing.
Mm-hmm.
With real time light. Wow.
I don't know if this was made on Java or a different...
I'm guessing Java, but, you know, they probably have a way to import it to regular Minecraft.
Java is regular Minecraft.
Oh. Well, Windows Minecraft.
Yeah. Bedrock, right.
Man, I've seen some really nice stuff now. I mean, I see even more videos of Minecraft RTX, and it's making me think, you know... Well, here's the thing. I know it's probably going to be on Xbox Series X, As a matter of fact, I definitely know it's going to be on Mark. And since I already have I haven't gotten back to Minecraft on the Xbox lately. I will when I have free time. But you'll have Minecraft RTX on the Xbox Series X. So I'm pretty sure it'll still be on Game Pass. So I'll be able to check it out there too. Now, you can cross-platform play, right?
You're supposed Minecraft? To be able to. Yes, with
Xbox.
Okay,
so at some point, when I have something to show, I'll invite you in, Scott.
Right.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Xbox Series X design blend... it's not called Xbox Series X. It's called something else. It's called Project Osiris. Design blends game, console, speaker, and projector into one. This comes from Tom's Guide. Microsoft's Xbox Series X has already looked like it'll be a force to reckon in the next console generation. However, one designer has taken the challenge of improving on the console by adding a whole bunch of extra features. Named Project Oris by Joseph Demary via T3, this combines the Xbox Series X console with a 3D speaker. It's more like it has a subwoofer and all that. It's more like a soundbar. But it's more like shaped like a 3D, and an 8K projector to create an all-in-one gaming center, or as Dumary describes it, a smart console. The concept also includes an Xbox digital assistant for smart home music and console-related voice commands, sort of like having the Echo, and accompanying a controller with a center touchscreen display, a fingerprint scanning D-pad, and over-air wireless charging to power up the controller from a distance without wires. That's actually a cool feature. I want to see if I can get something like that. Not contact charging, but, it just has to be in the same room with you charging. There's still the usual array of ports on the back if you do want to plug the console into something else. A soundbar and projector are common accessories for gamers who don't want to rely on their TV. These can add a lot to the basic cost of a brand new console, and while a project like Project Oris combines all these things into one package, this will no doubt be a top-end product for enthusiasts. Yeah, 8K projector? I'm guessing this thing will probably cost like $2,000. But I will say this, if you wanted to combine your Echo with your soundbar, it's its own TV, so it's portable. All you have to have is a white wall to shine it on something. It's really, really cool, but also probably really, really expensive.
Let me see.
Have either of you watched the video?
No.
You should have.
It's
like...
Yes.
It's like they took the Echo and said, we're gonna inject you with a console and a TV and a speaker. I don't like the controller, though. The controller has that D-pad that's more of a sliding thing, and it has the PlayStation-style screen on it.
Yeah, they're doing some interesting things with 3D sound engines for this next console generation. The way they were talking about the PlayStation 5 as well was interesting. The way they're talking about, like, not only doing haptics, but also designing a sound system that takes advantage of haptics in some ways similar to what they're talking about here with the soundbar and the speaker and projector. So it's all just like it's really interesting to see how they're
big cube.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a big cube. It's like the size of the Xbox Series X itself, except cube, not a tower.
Yeah.
And like I said, this would be the sort of thing that you could just portable. If it was affordable, I would say yeah, hell yeah, because I could just take this around, bring a couple of controllers with me, and you don't even need a TV. You just find a nice surface to project it on, and boom, you and your friends can play.
This next generation of consoles is just going to be absurd with how much they innovate on it.
Yeah, I also heard that Sony was not prepared for what the Xbox Series X was going to provide. Like, they were taken off guard, which is interesting. I don't know exactly what it means, but I don't think they were expecting anything as advanced as the Xbox Series X. It's going to be very interesting, though.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm going to be a tool and buy one, I just hope there isn't the... Well, here's the thing with the Xbox 360. The reason why I had so many red lights of death is because they had to build those things really quick because the Xbox, they were physically not legally allowed to make any more Xboxes. The contract with, I think it was NVIDIA, had run out, and they were not allowed, and they said, oh, fuck, we're going to have to make an Xbox 360. So they just filled them up with baling wire and scotch tape, just like the Commodore 64 was, just like the original iPod was, which is why they were all so janky, the first generation of them. I know you like to brag that you never had the Red Ring of Death, TJ. Yes, you can keep bragging about that.
I've actually never had a console fail on me, which is just, like, shocking, considering I'm almost always an early adopter.
You drop-kicked them, and you threw them against the wall, and they still didn't break.
Yep. I skeet shot with my Nintendo Switch.
I've heard the original Xbox was bulletproof. Somebody shot it with a gun and it didn't die.
The original Xbox was a beast. That thing was huge.
There was I think the original Game Boy got in a bomb. It was taken to war and was literally bombed, and it still worked. Still played Tetris.
Yeah, and we still don't know about the next generation Switch. CCN said that Nintendo better upgrade, or the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 lead in dust, which I don't agree with because the Switch is still less expensive.
But according to all the companies, Switch is not in competition with either, though, so it doesn't care.
But they also, Tom's Guide actually said there was a leak of a Nintendo Switch 2 with a dual-screen Switch.
Hmm.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could import all the 3DS games that have used the dual screens.
God, I hope that's true. That would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but first they have to fix their online.
Well, yeah.
Maybe they just pawn it off to Microsoft, say, hey, you do it for us.
But I want them to actually do it. I mean, it would be nice to be able to say, hey, TJ's on. Let me message him real quick. You know?
I think we could do that through GOG. I wonder if we could do that through GOG, since you can load on your Xbox, load on your, and just be able to do it that, cross-platform.
That would be nice. Yeah, I think you're supposed to be able to. Yeah, I think I'm supposed to be able to import, like, my Steam friends and other friends and should be able to.
Little tear going down my face. I have no friends in GOG.
I do have two friends on GOG.
No, I don't have any because I didn't bother to add any. I mean, I could add the two of you, but it's like I didn't get a chance to add. Wow, importing all my Xbox and PC and Windows 10 games, now the list of games I have on my GOG screen is like several pages now.
You'll see just how many games you have.
But that's only it's like I have much more than this. These are just my Game Pass games. Just imagine, there's After Party. Oh, can I install After Party on this?
Hmm.
No, I don't think so. Anyways, the only game I have installed from GOG is System Shock 2. I've been meaning to play that again. I started Alien Isolation, and it's like, System Shock knew how to draw you in. Alien Isolation just, I don't know. I know a lot of people like Alien Isolation, but to me, it's System Shock Lite. And it just doesn't quite have the same verve, for lack of a better word.
It's very different from System Shock to me.
Really? It's like, to me, it's a copy.
I don't think so. Like, System Shock still has sort of, like, the trappings I'm not going to say, like, all the trappings of a Deus Ex or a Bioshock game, but, like, it definitely has, I would say, more of a, it wants you to combat some of the things in the game, whereas Alien Isolation, if you're trying to fight the enemies in Alien Isolation, you're doing it absolutely wrong.
I just added Scott to my.
Mm-hmm. I accepted.
Charge $6.98.
Everything in Alien Isolation is made to kill you way faster than you can kill it. So, like, hiding, running, and most of the tools aren't even made to kill. The guns in Alien Isolation are absolute garbage. Like, it couldn't tell you more that you should run away, not fuck with them. Whereas I feel like System Shock at least a little bit wants you to fight what the threats in the game.
No, because here's the thing. Part of the thing about System Shock 2 is that in order to get the powerful weapons, you have to research them. And that takes a lot of times, and a lot of, you know, a lot of those weapons, well, they're good against annelids, but not against humans, or they're good against humans, but not against annelids, and you have to find ammo, and the weapons break down fast, which is one of the biggest complaints about, by the way, about System Shock, is that weapons degrade way too fast. So it's, you know, so yeah, you have weaponry, but it's not very efficient. I just said Oni Fox, not Teddy Old Man.
Wait, which one is that? Where? What?
Your name on GOG is Oni Fox. Sounds like a porno name.
Well, I don't even know. I don't think I'm on GOG.
You are.
Oh.
I sent it to your email address. You're there. Didn't you say you had one game on GOG? I mean, you probably have a GOG account. You just didn't download Galaxy.
Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel.
By the way, one thing that I'm really happy about is that Super Mega Baseball 3 has a release date.
Yep, May 13th?
12th.
12th?
I think it's 12th, yeah. The Tuesday, yeah, it has to be the 12th. That's a Tuesday. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. At least it's 2 weeks away, and, you know, I'm going to play the shit out of that.
Yeah. Super Mario, I'm happy to see that they finally, like, it sucks that they're not going to be doing it in April, but, like, I think that was to be expected a little bit. They've been hit hard.
Basically because of COVID, yeah.
Yeah, they've been hit hard by logistical issues dealing with COVID, and, like, it's cool that the delay that they had is only going to be pushing it back, like, half a month. That's not so bad.
See, now my quandary is, do I want to get it on Steam or do I want to get it on Xbox? Because if I do it on Steam, I can do a show with it. But I want my achievers. I may get it on an Xbox, and if it's good enough, I'll just wait and also get it on Steam later, too. Yeah, there's cross-platform play, but it's only for the pen and chase mode.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, what did I just do? Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us in iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Giant Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.